Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The white and fat bold conch shell, being gripped by the hand of Lord Krishna and sounded by Him, appeared to be reddened by the touch of His transcendental lips. It seemed that a white swan was playing in the stems of the red lotus flower. Purport. The redness of the white conch shell due to the lip touch of the Lord is a symbol of spiritual significance. The Lord is all spirit, and matter is ignorance of this spiritual existence. Factually, there is nothing like matter in spiritual enlightenment. And this spiritual enlightenment takes place at once by the contact of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. The Lord is present in every particle of all existence, and He can manifest His presence in anyone. By ardent love and devotional service to the Lord, or in other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord, everything becomes spiritually reddened like the conch shell in the grip of the Lord. And the Paramahamsa, or supremely intelligent person, plays the part of the ducking swan in the water of spiritual bliss, eternally decorated by the lotus flower of the Lord's feet. Om Gyanti Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Hare Krishna. I just wanted to make a comment before I start the actual class. When I was reading this purport, I was quite amazed by the purport, because Prabhupada is quite, one could say, quite esoteric and rasika in that purport. And generally when people read the 10th canto, especially the Rasa dance with Krishna and the gopis and the pastimes Vrindavan, it's very easy to say that it's rasika, it's very esoteric, it's very easy to get the mellow, the juice out of it. But from the first canto, when Krishna is entering Dwarka, Prabhupada is given an amazingly purport where he's bringing out spontaneous devotional service. And this illustrates Srila Prabhupada's exalted transcendental status. You know, so I was really amazed by that, because it's very easy to get the juice or the spiritual juice out of the 10th canto, the Rasa dance, but to get it from something like this, from the, obviously it's spiritual, but there's different degrees of spiritual, and Prabhupada brings it out. So I was just thinking that an advanced devotee can see Krishna and can get rasa from any syllable, any verse, any purport, any chapter, any canto of the Bhagavatam, because they're on that platform. And I just remembered of a pastime where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was invited to some debate or some sort of program where he was asked to present the supremacy of Sri Krishna. And so the organizers knew that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was an encyclopedia of Vedic knowledge. He knew the Shastras back to front. So they said, you have to prove your philosophy, you have to prove Krishna's God, but you can't use Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. So Bhaktisiddhanta was not fazed by the challenge. He said, sure, no problem. So then they said, you can't use the Smriti scriptures, the Puranas, Mahabharata, Ramayana. So he said, sure, no problem. So then the organizer said, you can't use the Upanishads. Bhaktisiddhanta again wasn't fazed. He said, sure, no problem. Then he said, don't come. Because he said, because Bhaktisiddhanta wasn't fazed, because he was able to prove it, Krishna, in every syllable and every verse of the scriptures. So an advanced devotee can do that. He can see Krishna in every verse. So I found that really amazing. I also remembered the pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was in Srirangam. I was fortunate enough to go there in August, have darshan of Lord Ranganath and Ramanujacharya. It's an amazing place. You should go if you haven't been. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, and on the outside the temple, he saw an illiterate Brahmana. And the Brahmana was crying. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went up to him and asked him, what's wrong? And he said, I'm crying. I'm trying to read Bhagavad Gita on the authority of my spiritual master, on the instruction of my spiritual master. I can't read. So, but I'm finding this really touching that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has become the servant of his devotee. So as we know, a charioteer is quite a, it's quite a humble position, because you have to kick the charioteer to indicate what direction you go in. So Arjuna was kicking Krishna to indicate what direction he wanted to go in, to go fast, to go slow. So he was crying because of this. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was really impressed. He said, so you've understood Bhagavad Gita, your understanding is perfect. So, and we also know that Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj was illiterate as well, but he was fully conversant and fluent with the teachings of Krishna consciousness. So I was just reflecting on that when I read it. So these things should be appreciated. So, like there's a pastime where Prabhupada, he called Shruti Kirti Prabhu into his room late one night. And he said, if you just read, I'm just paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact words. He said that if you just read this one book, you'll become perfect in your Krishna consciousness. So I think he also said, if you read one verse, one chapter, whatever. And we see that in scripture where people have come in contact with Shastra. And they've made so much spiritual advancement just by coming in contact. And I was reading, one book called Salted Bread a few years ago. And it's in Russia. And it was talking about how the devotees, they didn't have like a professional book production thing there. So they used to, photocopy, put it together. And I was reading that how the book was not in order. Like the pages were odd. They were upside down. Some pages were missing, but they were distributing these books and people were becoming devotees. And I was really amazed by that. So it's because Krishna's in that, and because the devotees were offering it with such devotion, it was having the transcendental effect. So I was quite amazed by that. Anyway, I'll start the class now. So I just wanted to share that. Okay, so this verse is about Krishna's energy and transformation. So there's a very famous verse in the Chandogya Upanishad, which is Sarv Kalv Idam Brahm. It's a verse that Mayavadis use a lot. And what it means is that everything is Brahman. Everything is the absolute truth. So when Prabhupada was, when he was teaching Krishna consciousness, he would always say whether we are the servants of Krishna. And he would talk about, and we are different from Krishna. But then one day Prabhupada said, he's quoted this verse, that everything is Brahman. Then the devotees got bewildered. They said, but how are we to understand this? You've just taught us that we're different. Now you're teaching us we're the same. So this is quite a topic of much debate amongst scholars in India, especially against the Vaishnavas and the impersonalists. So what the verse means is that everything is the absolute truth. And in one sense, that statement is true because everything comes from Krishna. Everything is the energy of Krishna. But at the same time, everything is not Krishna. Because there's a gradation, there's a hierarchy, between the energy and energetic. So we know that Krishna has three main categories of energy. He has the Antaranga Shakti, which is the spiritual energy. He has the Bahiranga Shakti, which is the mature energy. And then he has the Tathashta Shakti, which is us. And so we know that spirit and matter are diametrically opposed. For example, if matter is dead, is inert, is unconscious, whereas spirit is alive, is conscious, it has awareness. But at the same time, in the Bhagavatam, there's a very nice verse which talks about, it says, Idam hi Vishvam Bhagavan Ivetaraha. It says that the entire cosmic manifestation is but a transformation of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the Vedanta Sutra, it's also stated that the cosmic manifestation is a mixture of matter and spirit, But the cause is the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is called Shakti Parinamvada, which means that Krishna's energies are transformed. So the Mayavadis, they say Vivartavada, which means the source, Krishna, is transformed. So we don't believe that. So if you read teachings, if you read the conversations of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and I think it was Prakashananda Saraswati, I believe, if I'm correct, they talk about this principle. So he says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that, because Shankaracharya, he says that Vyasadev made a mistake. He got it wrong. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu corrects him. He says, but Vedanta Sutra is Ishvara Vachana. It's the words of God. How can he make a mistake? It's not possible. So they have a discussion, because they have a discussion then about Krishna, Krishna's energy. So to establish that, Krishna's energies are transformed, not us. So it's very, how can you say, it's quite a difficult concept to understand the relationship between matter and spirit. So, you know, if you look at the work in philosophy, there's like three philosophies that are really prominent. There's monism, which is everything is one. I mean, science is an example of that. Materialism, everything is one. Then there's dualism. Every matter and spirit are different. They're not connected. So the example of that was one French philosopher who preached that, I think, in the 18th century. Obviously, the Madhvacharya followers, they also preached that as well. And the third one is nihilism. Nihilism means nothing exists. So I remember someone, because Prabhupada would have debates with his followers, and they were discussing this philosophy that nothing exists. So Prabhupada said, if nothing exists, there's nothing much to talk about then. So that was quite funny. So there's this whole problem, you know, like, is everything one, or is everything different, or does nothing exist? But the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, reconciles this. It talks about that Krishna is one with everything, and at the same time, he's separate from everything. It's inconceivable, and it's happening simultaneously. So Prabhupada gives the example of the ocean and the drop of the ocean. The drop of the ocean and the ocean are similar in qualitatively. They're made from the same chemical composition. But quantitatively, there's a big difference. So it's very inconceivable to understand that. How can God be the same as us? How can we come from God? God, he's one with us, but he's different at the same time. One and different from his energy. So, you know, the Bhagavad Gita talks about Krishna's, the interrelationships between us, Krishna, us, and the material world. So this is the basis of Sambandhagyan. So without this, we can't really go on to Abhideya. We can't go on from there, go on to Prayojana. We have to understand this, that how Krishna is connecting with his energy. You know, and it's like amazing when you look at what Krishna does in, you know, Krishna Leela. You know, he lifts Govardhan Hill. You know, his mother looks in his mouth and sees the universe. He expands into 16,108 personalities to accommodate his many wives. You know, because Krishna is inconceivable. He can do anything he wants. So Krishna's energy, and we just know just like a drop of Krishna, what Krishna can do. We don't really understand it to the ultimate degree. But it's easy for devotees to understand, because devotees are not envious of Krishna. So Prabhupada gives the example that you have a jar of honey. The jar's closed and the bee is trying to get to the honey, but it can't get to the honey because it's blocked. So people who are envious of Krishna can't touch the honey, can't touch Krishna, but the devotees can, because they're not envious. And Krishna says to Arjuna, you can understand this knowledge. Why can you understand it? Because you're my dear devotee and my dear friend. You know, there's a relationship there. There's affection there. But that relationship is based on tattva, is based on understanding Krishna's position. So it's very important. So just talking further about Brahman, when I first came, I used to get very confused about Brahman. I was like, okay, because my understanding of Brahman was when in my beginning days of Krishna consciousness, was that Brahman just means the Brahma Jyoti. And then I would see, then, you know, because obviously Hindus and Mayavadis, they say that every, you know, Brahman is the supreme. And I was reading Bhagavad Gita, and I had to read all these verses referring to, Prabhupada Krishna refers to the material energy as Brahman. The Jiva is Brahman. The sacrificial fire is Brahman. And the Paramatma is Brahman. And there's many other examples. So I'd get really confused reading this. So then with studying, the more I studied, the more I understood it. So, you know, and Krishna presents an input in, in the Gita, when he talks about Brahman, he gives, I'm just going to look at a few examples here. He says, Mama Yonir Mahat Brahm, that the total material substance is called Brahman. Okay, so Pradhan, Mahatattva is called Brahman. Aksharam Brahm Paramam, the living entity is called Brahman. In chapter 4, Krishna says, the sacrificial fire of the absolute truth is Brahman. And then in chapter 12, 1 to 4, it talks about the Brahma Jyoti. And, there's further uses. So there's, but nowhere in the Gita does Krishna equate them. He doesn't say they're all the same. He says they're different. And he shows there's a hierarchy between them. For example, he says in the 13th chapter, he said that the Jiva is transcendental to material nature. In the 4th chapter, Krishna says sacrifice is higher than matter. In the 12th chapter, Krishna says that Brahma Jyoti is the subject of liberation by the Gyanis. In the 15th chapter, Krishna begins by explaining that the knowledge of the Supersoul is considered to be more confidential and higher than Brahma Jyoti. And in the 14th and 12th chapter, Krishna established that Brahman is subordinate manifestation of Krishna. He says, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. So when Krishna, after this analysis, Arjuna says, he calls him, what does he call him? He uses Brahm, but he puts a prefix before it. He says, Param Brahm. He says, you are the supreme person. So he's not just calling Brahman. He's saying, you are the supreme. So he's saying, you are the ultimate Brahman. Because everything is Brahman. Because everything is made, ultimately everything is coming from Krishna. And Krishna and our soul is made from the same substance. So qualitatively, all the different manifestations of Brahman, material nature, spiritual activities, the jiva, and so many other examples, they find their summit, their conclusion in Krishna. They come from Krishna. So Vedanta Sutra describes Brahman as janmadi asya yataha. It says that, because the first verse is atato brahma jidnasa, then it says, second verse is, Brahman is the source of everything. And the first verse of Bhagavatam also has janmadi asya yataha. It says that Krishna Vasudeva is the source of everything. So it's very important we understand what Brahman is. So everything, in one sense, everything is Brahman because Krishna is with that. But he's different at the same time. Everything is an energy of Krishna. So we have to understand his principle of Shakti Parinamvad. Very important. Now, so, you know, in the purport we read how when Krishna blew into the concha, the concha was transformed. We know the principle of, Prabhupada talks about spiritualizing matter. So when we spiritualize matter, so Prabhupada gives the example that if you put a metal rod into fire, it takes on the qualities of fire. It becomes fire-like, becomes red, it becomes hot, and it will have the same effect as fire. But as soon as you take it out, when it cools down, it's no longer like fire. So when, as devotees, you know, we use the principle of Yukta Vairagya where we engage things in Krishna service, material elements, and that helps us to progress in Krishna service. And, you know, it's quite amazing if you look at, you know, if you read Prabhupada, Lilamrita and the pastimes, Prabhupada was very, very, what's that word I'm trying to think of? He was very broad-minded in how he used material things in Krishna service. Like, there's one pastime, I remember reading, there was one devotee who got initiated. And he had this sentimental attachment to this towel he was covered with when he was born. So he gave that as dakshin to Srila Prabhupada. So when the devotees came to give dakshin, he presented it to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada saw it and said, what is this? And he threw it away. So that devotee got quite hurt. But the next day, that devotee came, and he saw that Prabhupada was using it as a rug in his room. So I thought that was quite amazing. You know, there's so many other examples we can think of, where Prabhupada was very broad-minded in his use of the principle of Yukta Vairagya. You know, like I remember reading Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's biography by Bhakti Vikas Maharaj, and it was talking about how when they opened the temple in Mayapur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he invited these English dignitary people. I can't remember the names, but they were like high up in British aristocracy in India, and he fed them meat. He gave them cigarettes. And obviously we can't imitate that, but, you know, he was preaching to them on that type of level. And like, there's also a quote by, and you know, there's a pastime where Prabhupada, when they got a temple, I think it was in Los Angeles, Prabhupada said that, you know, don't take, because it was a church, and Prabhupada said, don't take away the seating arrangements, because, you know, the church has a certain seating arrangement. But so he said, leave that there. You know, we'll also have a deity of Jesus Christ, and we'll put a deity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu next to it, and we'll worship both of them, no problem. Everyone can come, but they'll chant Hare Krishna at the same time. So Prabhupada was very broad. Obviously, that didn't happen, but Prabhupada did say it. So there were so many amazing things that Prabhupada did in his use of Yukta Vairagya. And we also see devotees do that. You know, they use rock music in kirtan, they use bass guitar, or, you know, all sorts of things. So spiritualizing matter, we have to understand, when we engage matter in Krishna service, it's not that the matter becomes self-aware, it becomes conscious of itself and conscious of others, it becomes full of bliss, full of knowledge. It's being used in Krishna service, and that becomes like a tool for us to use in Krishna service. But it doesn't become spirit per se. It becomes like spirit. So there's a very important principle to understand. So then we have the example, you know, of deity worship. Now, you could say you've spiritualized matter, but you haven't really spiritualized matter, because that deity becomes spiritual, obviously not just through prana pratishtha, but also through the devotion, through the bhakti process, through the love of the devotee, the deity comes into Krishna comes into the deity, so we can worship that deity. So it's a very powerful thing. You know, like deity worship is like such a source of debate amongst, you know, Abrahamic traditions, even Hindu traditions. Like there's one tradition in Hinduism called the Arya Samaj, and they reject deity worship. They just do fire sacrifice. So they just can't understand how you can worship God in the form of an image. So they don't understand how Krishna can come into his energy. It's his energy. He can do what he wants with it. Prabhupada says Krishna can transform spirit into matter and matter into spirit. It's his energy. He can do what he wants. So, you know, and you know, this is interesting. So if you look in history, like if you read the story of Moses, when he climbed up this mountain, it was the Sinai Peninsula. When he climbed up to the top, he had like darshan of God, and God appeared to him in the form of a bush, a bush that was inflamed. And it's explained that he took off his shoes, he bowed down, and he had conversation. He didn't think in his mind, this is, how can God come in a bush? He understood, there was no problem there. So it appears that there was an understanding that God can appear anywhere he wants. You know, we read in the Bhagavatam, God appears as in the form of a boar, in the form of a fish, in the form of a lion. Because that shows Krishna can do anything. It's his energy. He can come into anything, he can take any form. Like sometimes people say, why is Krishna blue? Well, he's blue because he chooses to be blue. It's his free will. It's his free choice. And so just, you know, so when they use the term idol worship, you know, to refer to the deity, for idol worship to exist, there must be something true before that. For example, you can't say something's false if you can't compare it to something that's true. False can only exist if something is true. Like you have counterfeit money. How can you call it counterfeit money if you don't have real money? It's not possible. Like I remember in the 90s when I was in school, you know, there was this whole thing like there's designer clothes started to come in, and nobody could afford to buy these expensive Italian designer clothes. You know, like a shirt was like £100. Like in the 90s, that was a lot of money. So what people would do, they would buy fake imitation of that. So instead of paying like £100, you'd pay like £20. You know, then you'd go to school. You show it off, you're like, oh, well, you know, I've got a Ralph Lauren shirt, you know, I look really cool. But and I remember everyone would look behind the shirt and say, no, that's not real, because that design, that tag's not at the back, or something like that. But the point is that you can only have something fake if something original exists. Otherwise, it makes no sense. So, you know, also we have, you know, imitation money. Imitation money can only exist if there's real money in the first place. So it's very important. So like I have a lot of debates with people from different religious traditions. I just say to them, yeah, we reject idol worship too. We don't believe in it. But But the thing is, idol worship exists because it's been concocted from the real thing. The real worshipping the form of God. And we see in tradition, like if you go to a Christian Catholic church, they have a deity of Mary, and they worship it. They don't say it's not God. They don't say it's not Mary. You know, there's deities of angels. They have, they don't say this is just material. They see it as spiritual. So that understanding is there. But in the Vedic tradition, we have a much more deeper understanding of that. So, you know, Krishna is amazing. He can do anything he wants. So Krishna can come into anything. Like I remember, like I was in one debate with one person, and he said, "Well, if everything's one, then you know why don't you eat stool? Why don't you offer stool to your deity?" So you know, I explained to him, like, you know, every Krishna is everywhere. He pervades everything. God is everywhere. I said, it even says that in your scriptures. However, we offer and do certain things that are prescribed. We don't do it. Everything is not one. Like Prabhupada, you know, he's having a debate with one person and he grabbed him by the shirt because he was playing the role of Maivadi. He said, why don't you wear a ball of cotton instead of wearing a kurta? So, you know, there is a qualitative and quantitative difference we apply. We apply discrimination. We don't see everything as one. Otherwise, you know, your money is my money and my money is yours. You know, your car is my car is yours. You know, why don't we apply that? But we don't apply that. So, you know, if you have a debate with Maivadi, you know, these things come up a lot. So, this principle of, I'll just read that paper because I really liked it, just part of the paper. Prabhupada says, factually, there is nothing like matter in spiritual enlightenment, and this spiritual enlightenment takes place at once by the contact of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. The Lord is present in every particle of all existence, and he can manifest his presence in anyone. And, you know, it's a very significant statement. Our society works on this statement. You know, we can't really function without the principle of Yukta Vairagya. So, you know, so we're using matter in Krishna's service. It's becoming spiritualized. You know, if you think about it, this world, everything is being transformed. You know, engineers, scientists, they're manipulating matter into another form, you know, and they're doing amazing things with it. And that's Krishna's inferior energy. You know, it's dead matter. And we're amazed by that. You know, what to speak of Krishna's Antaranga Shakti, his spiritual energy. So, you know, Rupa Goswami says that when one, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when he talks about Yukta Vairagya, he says that Anashaktasya Vishayan Yataraham Upayanjitaha Nirbande Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagyam Uchite. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. On the other hand, one who rejects everything should, without knowledge of his relationship to Krishna, is not as complete in his renunciation. So Prabhupada, the Prabhupada says utility is the principle. We use things in Krishna service. But the idea is we don't get attached to the thing we're engaging in Krishna service. You know, like someone may like to play harmonium. You know, we know that harmonium is not really an Indian, technically it's not an Indian instrument, it's a French instrument. But if we become more attached to the harmonium than the process of bhakti and then to Krishna, then that's a problem. Then our attachment is all wrong. You know, so we have to be intelligent about how we use things. We use it in Krishna service, we like it, but we don't become attached to these things. You know, we're attached to Krishna. The goal is to develop love for Krishna. So, you know, advanced devotees, they can see Krishna in the energy. They can use that. So, you know, it says in the Bhagavatam that you can see, there's different types of gurus in material nature. So we can get instructions from that. Now, I remember, like, you know, because when I was young, I really liked C.S. Lewis books. I really liked, you know, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and his other books. And I liked his quotes because I found him really inspiring. Because we used to study him when we were doing GCSE English. And I remember I came across one quote and I really liked it. And it was that, you know, everyone talks, I'm just paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact verse, but it says that everyone talks about forgiveness, but when it comes to it, it's very difficult. So, you know, so I shared that on social media. Then one devotee said, you know, why are you quoting this person for? He's not a devotee. He doesn't have love of Krishna. You know, I mean, he also said that Prabhupada didn't quote material personalities, but that's not actually true. He did. But the thing was, I was thinking, well, that's quite a narrow-minded view, because Krishna can preach to us through anybody, through a non-devotee, through material elements. You know, Prabhupada got the advice, inspiration to write books from a non-devotee. He said, you know, why are you writing books? Why are you writing magazines? Magazines you throw away, just write books. So Prabhupada took it. He took that instruction coming from Krishna. So Krishna can preach to us through anything. You know, just looking at something, just seeing something, we can get inspiration. And you know, there's that, you know, Prabhupada would always refer to Krishna consciousness as pure, unalloyed. That term unalloyed, Prabhupada, he got it from an advertisement talking about metal. Because I think it was in Boston when he arrived, and he saw this big billboard. And it was referring to the metal as something, something, unalloyed. And Prabhupada used it. So what's the problem? Why can't we use it? Obviously, you know, we need to have discrimination and, you know, common sense as well at the same time. But if we don't use things in Krishna service, how are we going to become relevant? How are we going to become dynamic? How are we going to be in terms of preaching Krishna consciousness? So one thing is, like, so we know that the material energy is Krishna's separated energy. But that doesn't mean Krishna, we have to understand that separate, just like, you know, Prabhupada, when he gives, Prabhupada's not present on the planet physically, but his vani is there, his lectures there, his lectures are just as potent as Prabhupada. There's no problem there, there's no issue there. So we shouldn't think it's matter, we just reject it. No, it has potency. Like we're attracted to, the reason why we're attracted to matter is because Krishna's within that. When we find something beautiful, it's Krishna that makes it beautiful. When we see flowers blooming, Prabhupada says it's Krishna smiling. So Krishna's the beauty in everything. Even the ugly things come, you know, everything comes from Krishna. So don't think the matter has no independent potency. It's coming from Krishna. That thing that makes it attractive is coming from Krishna. So anyway, I just wanted to say this is my thoughts and realizations. If anyone would like to make a comment or ask a question.